Middays with Mannix and Mannix.
I was going to listen to that, but then I just carried on living my life.
With Jeff Mannix.
What kind of bear is best? Black bear.
And Taylor Mannix.
I'm a Tony Romo fan and he retired, so now I bleed green. Go Birds!
Call 207-775-2217 or 1-866-811-9505.
Phone is ringing. Oh my God.
Every single thing that every fan does at home or at the stadium makes a direct impact in the game.
It's about to get all stupid up in here!
Middays with Mannix and Mannix begins now. Here's Jeff and Taylor.
The weather outside is weather.
It's called Two Brothers. It's just called Two Brothers.
You're Larry Bird.
Good morning. It is your Hump Day Wednesday edition of Middays with Mannix and Mannix. Jeff and Taylor, we are on the microphones. Would you believe today is actually the first day since the World Cup started that we have no matches? But it is the first day that we've had no matches as we prepare for the quarterfinals starting tomorrow in Boston with France against Morocco, or should I say in Foxborough. They call it Boston, according to FIFA. But we're here to talk about the World Cup and everything we've seen, obviously, through the round of 16. Our good friend, New England Revolution broadcast voice Brad Feldman, joins us right now. Brad, thanks so much for sharing some time with us here. How are you?
I'm good. Good to talk to you, Jeff. Taylor, how are you guys?
Doing just fine. We'd be doing a little better, I think, if we were talking about the U.S. men's national team in a quarterfinal against against Spain on Friday, but Belgium had a little something to say about that. What did you make of that match and how the U.S. men's national team unfortunately kind of didn't look ready for the moment?
Belgium were the better side. I think there are a lot of factors at play, but the main one is Belgium were better tactically, technically, and more experienced in the big moments. I think that the U.S. overall has made progress, not as much as many people had hoped, and expectations unfortunately get sort of shifted in real time when you have some success. You know, we always said that they were going to struggle more when they faced a team that wanted the ball more, also a team that beat them 5-2. They had to scout from watching the way the U.S. had beaten Bosnia, and especially against, Paraguay and Australia in the group phase. But, I do agree, it's pretty obvious that the U.S. was not on their best form, out of the gate. They gave up that early chance. They were not crisp in the opening minutes. But part of that is Belgium, right? Like, they took up good spots. They didn't get sucked into the press triggers that we talked about. They didn't allow U.S. to attack down the wings. They closed down passing lanes. They pressured the ball at the right time coming through the midfield. And, it leaves a bad taste. The scoreline is painful. The politics that surround it, I certainly don't think helped. There's no way for me to really know. I'm sure that stories and reports will leak out about the day leading up to the game. I'll say this. I thought this situation was unfortunate. I thought it was classy of Balogun to go talk to Rudy Garcia, the Belgian coach. He was sort of just caught up in the circumstances. But if that was a factor, and if I had to guess from, well on the outside of the inner circle there, I would guess that the guys were not in a great mindset because it felt like a lot of the soccer world was turning against them because of the FIFA ruling, which you can argue the merits on the precedent, but the president got involved and that made it into a much bigger thing than just the soccer decision. But they should have been able to mentally as a group push through that and be ready for, the biggest game of most of their lives or one of the two biggest games. In the end, guys, round of 16 is what I expected. It's what I predicted. When you get into the knockout phase of the competition, teams get better. And, you know, with Christian Pulisic not at his best, you know, he had that calf injury. Everybody seemed to forget that because, you know, played against Bosnia and came in late against Turkey. But, you know, he clearly was not his best. I thought Tillman and Balogun were the two guys maybe who acquitted themselves the best. McKennie and Adams were excellent in midfield, like we talked about last week. They were neutralized for the most part by the organized younger Belgian lineup and the way they set up with their spacing. And, you know, you could talk about collective sharpness and certain guys not having a good game. And, you know, people, you know, upset about the third goal. It looked bad. But first of all, Matt Turner. Can I say it again? Matt Turner, in my opinion, would have been the right choice all the way through. But you're not putting out, you know, Priest didn't do well on the second goal either, but neither did the back line. Yeah, we were all high on this team just a week ago, right? So let's try to take a step back with a couple days hindsight and realize it was a net plus, a step forward, not a massive leap forward in terms of the perception of the strength of the national team. I think it showed exactly where we are, you know, at least the senior national team level. And, you know, that's the tip of the pyramid for the men's side. So it's not, you know, it's not where we hope the sport would be and the national team would be in 2026. But if you dial things back 30, 40 years, it's incredible advancement. You know, and the fact that you got your hat handed to you by Belgium, you know, at a certain point, you know, like the fourth goal, like you're pressing for, you know, a goal. So that's what I have to say. Like it definitely leaves a bad taste and takes a little bit of the shine off of the overall, you know, feel good story. But I think it also maybe in the long run does the sport power of good by drawing into sharp focus what the areas of need are in the development system, the soccer culture. You know, how far we've come, how far we still have to go yet to really be on par with these countries where the sport is the first, second, and third choice of, you know, most able-bodied males when they're growing up.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Brad, on the expectation. I know Jeff and I both had them in the round of 16 as well there. So, I mean, for us, I mean, expectations pretty much met. I do want to ask you, too, a little bit on the Pulisic stuff. He's been under the microscope most recently, Carly Lloyd, decided to get involved with a quote, rest when your playing career is over on X. I mean, for, I guess I'll ask this, what criticism of him is fair right now and what is unfair?
Listen, I saw the interview that prompted the Carly Lloyd response. You know, people are lauding her for being plain spoken. She's certainly entitled to be with her position and her playing record. I think he put that in a sort of somewhat unfortunate way and is easy to sort of frame it a certain way. You know, it's a little bit like Jaylen Brown. Like, it's just like timing has a lot to do with it. Tone has a lot to do with it. In the end, I think Pulisic played through that calf injury. You know, he's always been sort of a feast or famine guy. I think we're putting way too much of a burden on him if we think he's going to be our Messi or Mbappe. He's not that guy. He has runs where, you know, he's, you know, been really prolific. And then, like, with AC Milan this past season, up until New Year's, he was one of the leading scorers in Serie A. And then I don't think he scored again in league play maybe one goal until the end of May. I don't even remember the stats, but, you know, and so then when he had to, you know, miss a game with the calf injury in the group stage, you know, he was never going to be 100%. You would like to see him rise to the occasion. He didn't look sharp. He lost the ball 11 times in the first half. He clearly wasn't himself. You understand why Pochettino took him off if he's not. You know, I thought Reina came in and did better. Sebastian Verhalter showed some spark. But, you know, I think it's a bit glib and kind of a cheap shot by Carly Lloyd. You know, Tim Howard jumped in and insinuated some stuff. He he sort of said you have to ask him the direct question, and then he'll say some very direct things. I don't know if that's how I was on an airplane. Is that continuing to escalate?
Not that we've seen anyway. Of course, then again, I'm not one who follows a lot of that stuff, but...
Yeah, but see, this is the thing, and now, like, ex-pros are piling on, and two respected ex-pros, you know, if Pulisic isn't the guy to be the guy, if he ain't him, then, right, like, here's the thing. I'm not trying to play both sides of the fence. Like, he didn't put it very well. It sounded like, oh, I'm so tired. I could use a rest. I don't mind that we're out. That doesn't sound good, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when everybody's so disappointed. I think he thought the question was being asked in a different way. It may reflect some part of his, you know, sort of sporting character and makeup that I'm not familiar with enough to comment on. But, like, I would also say that, right, like, he missed a game 2 weeks ago because he was injured, right? So we didn't get great performance from him. And he went straight through from his club season into the friendlies and training camp for the U.S. And now he's just had this sort of intensive, you know, like, at least goal of a peak experience in international competition. Like, I remember I asked Paul Mariner what he did. You know, he played with an Achilles. It was even worse than Pulisic injury. He did his whole last-minute rehab thing at the University of Cambridge for the 82 World Cup. I said, what'd you do afterwards? Like, did you stay in Spain? Did you celebrate? Did you take a vacation? He said, I went home to my mom's house and slept. That's what he said. I went home. He's like, I was shattered. And they got, you know, sort of unfairly because of the qualification system to advance. They got eliminated with actually losing a game. And he scored against France, as we talked about. And this is a tough, tough guy. Now, he didn't say it to the media. There wasn't social media that hit instantaneously and a whole, you know, panel of, you know, experts to shoot him down. I don't think he ever said it publicly. I think but the truth was that I remember that answer. He was like, it wasn't that he was ashamed. He was just physically destroyed from putting everything into it. And so I'm going to give Pulisic the benefit of the doubt, even though he didn't play to his best levels. You know, I would have loved to see Matt Turner play, like I said. I would have loved to see Diego Luna in the side, especially for, like, when you're down 3-1 and you're desperate, a little bit of, you know, swagger and a little bit of growl and you know, and creativity, right? But, you know, if we dial it back 10 days, Pochettino is getting ready to be a national hero. So a lot of good things happen. Let's not blame one guy. Don't blame Matt Freese. It wasn't embarrassing for you people. He made a mistake. It happens. Matt Turner, his one weakness is, you know, he's had a couple of those moments. Doesn't usually do it. I think he's improved a lot. But, you know, Matt Turner's better coming claiming crosses, in my opinion, even though he has a slimmer build. He's very strong and he elevates. But all these guys are out there doing their best. You know, don't hate the player, hate the game. I think Henri invoked that one on the desk for Fox the other day. But, yeah, listen, they made a run in the World Cup. When they went out in the round of 16 in 94, everybody was over the moon. And when they went to the last eight in 02, nobody even talked about it because I was working on ESPN show, a World Cup tonight on ESPN2 at the Charlotte studios. I swear it was like, you know, 19 people and a couple hundred crickets watching. Like, and nobody cared. So, like, it's great that this enthusiasm wave has risen, and hopefully it leads to more improvement in the game in this country.
Yeah, hopefully it does indeed here. And I know we've got to let you go here fairly soon, but I'll maybe ask you a little bit, because now that we've got eight teams left, it all seems like it kind of has gone chalk in a way, right? It's like eight powerful soccer countries that are the ones that are left here. And with an expanded tournament, maybe people could have seen some upsets there. But ultimately, I think we've got eight teams left that you could all make an argument probably would have reached the last eight at this point. Are there any surprises, I guess, to you of any of the eight that are left?
Belgium might be, you know, the biggest surprise. Norway, but I had Norway as a sleeper. You know, there's a reason why these teams are higher seeded, have the higher FIFA rankings. Most of them have name stars that you've heard of if you watch the Premier League. And, you know, save Morocco, but, you know, they play in top leagues too. You know, you think of PSG, places like that. Like Morocco, France quarterfinal rematches of their really tight semifinal in the last World Cup. I think, you know, for me, the takeaway was the way that some of these, you know, sort of brand name soccer powers, when the chips were down, were able to pull it off. You know, in the previous round of 32, Belgium's late comeback against Senegal that got them to the U.S. game, I think that built their confidence, but also showed their quality. England holding on against Mexico, and you know, that was a thriller. You know, these games that have gone to penalties. And then Argentina, say what you want about video review and the refereeing and everything, you know, like form held because Messi is, you know, from another planet. And it's not just his skill and his game IQ, it's his compete level. It's all those things rolled into one. You know, he had a level of just sort of determination that he was able to sort of will into action because he's the greatest player in the world. And so, yeah, you know, like, I'll just say this, you know, for me, the guys who have been interesting for me to watch aren't necessarily the goal scorers, although you give somebody like Harry Kane a lot of credit. You know, he doesn't just score goals. He can pass the ball. He works out of possession. But the guys for me who I've loved watching, Jude Bellingham, just a boss out there the other day in the Mexico game. He's really come good. And, you know, like he is really like a special player. I talked about Michael Olise for France. You know, France, I thought, did a really good job sort of shrugging off mostly the unsporting attentions of the Paraguay players, you know, who crossed some lines in that game. Even though I will say, go back and watch, like, Argentina, England, and Argentina, Brazil from the 60s, or Argentina, Holland from the 70s. Like, some of the stuff we're seeing now is child's play. But it's still, there's a line. Their gamesmanship is fine, part of the game, but, it you know, racism, intent to injure, that kind of thing, terrible. But I would say that, yeah, and you know what it comes down to? It's not – because we were talking about last week how, like, Holland and Germany are out. So not – you know, Brazil is out. So there has been a changing of the guard in a certain respect. I thought the minnows in the expanded field overall, with the exception of maybe, like, Qatar, have really done well. Jordan had their moments. Uzbekistan had their moments, you know. Curacao, you know, like those are good stories, most of them, you know. But what I will say is this, and this will can be the kicker for me, like this will be, you know, my last remark for this round, is I join the chorus of people who say that it's about the soccer culture. When we lost, we being the U.S., to Belgium in 2014, some people on the Patriots side at the stadium said, hey, you know, do we blame this on Indiana and Virginia and Akron and North Carolina, UCLA? Are they not sending the U.S. national team, these guys, you know, developing them enough? I said, are you kidding me? They get to college soccer, and they're not 95, 98% of the way there. Toothpaste out of the tube, no chance for beating Belgium. Now, things have shifted since then. The MLS academies and everything have really, you know, we turn on more good functional pros in this country than ever before. But, you know, when you see these, you know, the two things you see, one is the pay-to-play model, and nobody's trying to stop soccer and sports companies from making money. But if we want elite players, look at the European and South American and African development pyramid. For the most part, you know, it's a self-sustaining thing where youth clubs that develop these players get restitution payments of some kind. You know, I don't know if that's the exact term of art, something like that. They get reimbursed, you know, as part of transfer fees, and guys go pro, and they even pay that forward into, like, the town and regional, you know, non-private academies. So, you know, when it's working well, parents don't pay for their kids to play soccer. It's a people's sport. It doesn't become prohibitively expensive. That's one thing. That's not going away in the U.S., but there has to be some sort of hybrid model, and also one that doesn't take care of, like, the we can all see when the next Messi is coming along, or we'd like to think so. But there are all these people who develop at different times. We got to keep in each age group, you know, hundreds, thousands of guys who are, and women who are really, you know, have a goal to be elite. And then, you know, the other piece comes before that. Like, I think street soccer, more free play, more pickup soccer, not just regimented coaching license, you know, training sessions and all that, and academy stuff, which is very good. And we have that in this country, and it's really excellent and developed. Free play. But before pickup street soccer, before we try to shift the youth soccer model, at least in some ways, to make it inclusive and get everybody who wants to play in there. More than that, what we need is people who can use the soccer ball so that it's like tossing a tennis ball to yourself or putting the keys in your car. You know, it's got to be like breathing. Then you can take advantage of the spatial awareness and foot-eye coordination and quick twitch speed and explosiveness and tactics and tactical adjustments and all that. Because it's like people used to say, well, why are you all these kids from Saskatchewan make it to the NHL? Like, because as soon as they can walk, they can skate. I don't try to be reductive, but that's what we're missing here. We have more of it, but my friend Tom Beyer wrote the book, Soccer Starts at Home. If you don't want your kid playing in the living room, put a soccer ball in the basement or the backyard, or get some sort of, you know, Nerf thing that they can kick around in their room without breaking anything. But you have to be at one with the ball. You see that with Lionel Messi. You know, I kid around, he's the greatest living human. But, you know, and he has outlier natural ability, but it is developed. He had that skill set mostly developed. All the things you see, like his game experience, obviously he's got decades of game experience now. But, you know, the first goal against Cape Verde, where he took it one touch with his left and roofed it with his left, control of the outside of his foot, great pass. He orchestrated the whole play, made the right run, but then when the ball arrived, it was like he had a magnet on his foot, and then he had a bottle rocket on his foot. And it's hard to develop that if you take it up at 8, 9, 10 years old. That's been proven. So that's the last thing I'll say. I ran over. But, like if you want your kid to have a chance, you can do other sports. You can go to math camp. You can do woodworking, whatever you want. But get the ball at his feet or her feet young, and then we'll have a nation of footballers. And then we can take advantage of all the things we have, like great athletes and great facilities. And great coaching, which has really come a long way. So I would say net plus for the U.S. The tournament's still good because there are some big teams in there and big names to watch, like Holland and Messi and Kane. And you know, so, yeah, like, I'm not in a bad mood, actually. But, you know, the hangover's gone, and the U.S. hit expectations didn't exceed. We'll take that for now.
Yeah, and Brad, summer league action's here, so I'm sure you've been enjoying a little bit of the rookies too with basketball, like I have.
I'm not gonna shock you when I tell you that I'm actually going to be in Vegas for summer league and plan to be at a couple Celtics games.
Love that! I can't wait to hear a little report of that maybe next time when we talk to you, my friend.
Happy to.
All right. Well, Brad Feldman, thanks for sharing some time with us. We do appreciate it. Hard to believe we're actually 2 weeks away from the return of the Revolution to an MLS pitch, but it's almost here. So, Brad, we'll talk again next week. Looking forward to it.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Again, New England Revolution broadcast voice, Brad Feldman. We'll be right back with the phone lines open to you again next on Middays with Mannix and Mannix on a Hump Day Wednesday.